it's a story that never happened. You know, despite decades and decades of research and archaeological digs, there is no evidence uncovered that there was ever a significant population of Israelites in Egypt. Although my DNA report shows that my ancestors who were Jewish did spend a couple of thousand years in the Nile Valley. But there's no evidence that such a population was targeted for enslavement. No evidence that some significant mass of people fled from Egypt, nor that they fought and won the promised land of Canaan. To the best of our knowledge, the Exodus story ranks with fairy tales and myths like the Three Bears, Cinderella, and Little Red Riding Hood. And yet, the story of Exodus is an amazing story, because it is remembered everywhere and told over and over as historical truth. Year after year, for centuries, Exodus has been celebrated by the Jewish people at Passover, recited at Seders, and practiced by eating only unleavened bread and cakes for 8 days. It's an amazing story because it lies at the foundation of Black liberation theology. The very history of African American slavery aligns it with the biblical story of Israelite slavery, the escape of slaves, and the freeing of an oppressed people. When Israel was in Egypt's land, it was an African American spiritual, not a hymn that is sung with the blessing of the matzah. The story of Exodus resonates with every oppressed people everywhere. In the depths of the story, the suffering people call out to God, and God at last hears their cry and responds. Then God calls out to a leader from the people to become his messenger, his prophet, and surrogate to bring about an end to oppression. And his prophet, Moses, hears that call and responds, "Here I am." I grew up in my Jewish family celebrating Passover every year and eating matzah for 8 days. My grandfathers would lead a Seder on the first two nights of Passover. And the most dramatic moments came when they would recite the 12 plagues that Moses brought on the Egyptians with his magical powers. But much less ceremony was devoted to what the Bible says happened next. The 40 years of wandering in the desert that finally ended in bloody wars that defeated the people who already inhabited the promised land of Canaan. I think there's good reason why people would rather hear of the Exodus than focus on the story of the next 40 years, life after Exodus. Exodus itself has a happy ending, like most fairy tales. The story of the Israelites' 40 years of wandering is instead a story of a flawed leader, an irritable and irritating God, and a doubting and exasperated people. The distance from Egypt to Canaan, the promised land, was, after all, just 250 miles. Assuming that they went on foot instead of riding camelback, if the Israelites had walked 5 miles a day, they could have reached Canaan in about 50 days. Instead, it takes them 40 years. In the wilderness, they complain about a lack of meat, a lack of bread. At one point, the people say, "Oh, if only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread." For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. This complaining and regret annoys God like anything. He calls them stiff-necked people. But God comes up with manna and some extra wild animals and water. Moses is no perfect leader. While they were on the journey, he goes to the mountaintop and spends a month and a half visiting with God, who gives him the tablets with the Ten Commandments. Then, when Moses comes back down, he finds the people confused and faithless to God who had brought them forth from slavery. The people have dreamed up an ultimate guard, God, and contributed all their gold to craft an image of their new deity as a golden calf. Moses gets so angry, he smashes the tablets with the commandments. Then he has to go back up the mountain to get a replacement. Moses takes on too much. He works day and night and doesn't learn to delegate his duties until he finally hears his father-in-law's advice. His father-in-law says to him, "What is this that you're doing for the people? Why do you sit alone? What you're doing is not good. You will surely wear yourself out, both you and these people with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone." As I read these passages, as I read them, I found myself living in the here and now. We too are people who more than once have come out of a past of tyranny and injustice. And each time we have sought to build a better and more just world. Remarkable leaders, despite their flaws, have led us to that better world. Our founding fathers were no perfect angels, but they created a republic that has endured. Abraham Lincoln was a crafty politician who began his presidency with the great compromise of accepting a nation of slave states and free states. But later, he issued the Emancipation Proclamation before his assassination. Martin Luther King, Jr. began our march toward a promised land of civil rights and equality for people of color, for the poor, and oppressed. Yet, like those wanderers in the wilderness, we have often found ourselves fraught with dissension. Sometimes we've looked backward to an idealized past, erasing from memory the suffering and injustice that had ruled our lives. Often we've given power to those who've chosen to ignore the history of our nation and who violate the very values on which our nation was founded. Today feels like a turbulent time. It seems strange to hear from the halls of power in our nation of immigrants the relentless assault on today's immigrants and the spread of lies to generate a climate of fear and mistrust. When we're told that our immigrants are a threat to our lives, this sounds so much like the policies of that mythic Pharaoh of Egypt who viewed the Israelite immigrants as a threat. He said to his people, "Look, the Israelite people are more numerous and more powerful than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, or they will increase, and in the event of war, they will join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land." Once we were alarmed by the misconduct of police, and we put in place rules and policies to redress wrongdoing. It seems strange now to hear from the halls of power that we must abandon the orders for the accountability of our police force for the murder of innocents. but black or brown skin. Once we were alarmed by the unnecessary deaths of those who could not afford medical care. It feels strange now to hear from the halls of power that their care is no longer a concern, and that the work that was done to reach the ill and disabled should be undone. It seems strange to hear from the halls of power the assaults on the newspapers and news channels that present corroborated facts. It seems strange to learn that vital facts about climate change are now lost from the government websites, that data on health resources for women have gone missing from our government's websites. It seems strange that the gap between rich and poor is growing year by year. It seems strange to hear the assaults on truth itself. But, yes, I do believe that we will find our way out, our exodus from these troubled times. I do believe that the call for change to a new and better world is sounding forth around us. I do believe that wise spirits are waking up and hearing that call and are seeking within themselves for response. I do believe that a pathway will open before us at last, and that we can come into an era which promotes the worth and dignity of every person, which affirms justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, which affirms and promotes a free and responsible search for truth. But the Exodus story tells us getting out of bad times is one thing. Getting to the promised land is something else entirely. One of the most compelling details about the story is that it took the Israelites 40 years to enter the promised land. So it had to be a new generation of that people who fulfilled that promise and who set foot in the promised land. They were a generation who had never lived in Egypt, who had never known the suffering of slavery. This new generation knew the deprivations of nomadic life in the desert, but they also lived the freedom of their journey through the wilderness. They were a generation that accepted a new identity and a new faith, with new rules of conduct, of right and wrong. I don't know if it will take us 40 years from now to get to where we need to go. As a people, we're not going to hike 250 miles, and we're not going to trek the 55.7 million miles to Mars, at least not in the next decade. The promised land is no longer a geographical space. We're now one people, one species of human beings on this planet. But it lies in our hands and the hands of the new generations on this earth to restore our planet and create again the lands of milk and honey. It lies in the hands of the new generations to welcome the stranger, to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to care for the sick. It lies in the power of the new generations to end the assault on women and the assault on people of color. It lies within the power of the new generation to speak truth, to cry out against falsehood, to test reality, to share the legacy of truth. The journey that we ourselves are making in our lifetimes is only a beginning. Yes, it's important to vote. Yes, it's important for us to speak up and write what we believe. But our call is to look beyond our own days and ask, what are we teaching the young? Have we told them that the journey before us all is to affirm that we're all one people, no matter skin color or language, no matter our gender? As this new generation journeys with us and beyond, have we taught that we have only this earth we share, and that its air and water and temperature and wildlife are fragile, and they, the young, will be the stewards of it all? In that promised land, if our planet survives, will they know that violence will only beget violence, that compassionate kindness will lift them up as they lift up others? Will they know that however easy it is to lie and deceive, it's truth that opens us to new pathways and the fruitfulness of the future? Have we given the attention we must give to rebuild our system of public education for all? Have we said all we need to say each day to our children and to our grandchildren? And finally, are we listening to the voices of our young people who have new ways to connect with each other and new ways to organize around the issues that touch their lives? An ancient Chinese proverb says, a journey of 10,000 miles begins with the first step. And the Buddha said, there are only two mistakes one can make along the road to truth: not going all the way,